Welcome to Life Quest, a program that directs you to subjects and books that will make a difference in your life. A program that will make you think and strengthen your journey of faith in the 21st century. My name is Dwight Lainhoff. Kurt Sinski is the CEO of Lutheran Social Services of the South. He is an author, and today we're talking about his book, The Calling, Living a Life of Significance. It's a Concordia publication. Welcome to Life Quest.
Dwight, it's great to be here. Thank you.
You know, in the back of your book, it says, Biblical Wisdom Combined with Secular Strategies. What brought you to writing this book?
You know, Dwight, I'm a big believer that when you combine what God has provided us in terms of all the secular wisdom that's out there, scientific literature, with obviously our biblical principles, that's a pretty good strategy in terms of giving you some good guidelines to how to live out your life. I try to do that in my work as a CEO, combining biblical wisdom with great secular leadership principles, and I think we can apply it to our entire life as well, our family life, our professional life, our congregational life, our community life. And so my latest book has been talking about that. How do we discover our calling? And then also, how do we have the courage to actually live out our calling?
As you're describing this, I can't help but remember, and maybe I'm not quoting it exactly, but Jesus once said something about the children of darkness are sometimes wiser than the children of light.
Yes, and you know what? Another favorite Bible passage of mine, and I'm probably mangling it a little bit, but you know, being wise as serpents and as gentle as doves.
Very good.
You know, we need to be both as we live in this kingdom.
Right at the beginning, you talk about Christ help, not self-help. What's the difference between the plethora of self-help books we have?
And you know, I've spent a lot of time reading self-help books, but and I like that genre. But at the end of the day, they're all designed to fail, because at the end of the day, it's what we want as opposed to what God is calling us to live. And, you know, at the end of the day also, you know, they're designed to make us prettier and they're wealthier and more successful. But once we reach a certain plateau, that kind of prize disappears in our grasp, and we always have that feeling that we want more.
Yeah.
A Christ help strategy allows us to discover how God intends us to live our life. You know, I'm a big believer that, you know, He created a unique life ahead of time for us, each of us. You know, Psalm 139, for you formed my inward parts, He knitted me together in my mother's womb.
Yes.
For I know the plans I have for you. And so the question becomes, how in our sinful nature do we, you know, not only discover our lives, and I talk about eight different strategies that help us, and then how do we find that courage to actually live out the life? So it is indeed a Christ help. We can't do this on our own, but through our faith and relationship with Jesus Christ and knowing that every day we're forgiven and so it's a brand new opportunity to start over again, we are able to receive that.
As we search for what Christ has in mind for us, that might turn us into quite different directions than we originally thought.
Yes, and I think it's not necessarily the life that we want to live, but it is in fact the life that we're called to live. You know, C.S. Lewis talks about, you know, to follow our vocation doesn't necessarily mean happiness.
Yes,
but once that vocation's been heard, there is no happiness for those who do not follow.
You right away point out that sometimes we make mistakes, even in these type of decisions, and you have on page 20, starting here, the three mistakes. Could you tell us what those are?
Yeah, there's several mistakes that we make. One is that sometimes we focus on the what as opposed to the how. And so, for example, I'm more concerned maybe about my title as opposed to how I'm supposed to live out that life today. I was talking to a retired CEO, and he was complaining to me that he doesn't have an opportunity to serve anymore because he no longer has that platform. Well, what I wanted to share with him, and what I did share with him, is that, you know, just because we don't have a platform doesn't mean that we stop serving.
Mm-hmm.
And in many ways, it's those little things that we do that are more important than just the title that we have. You know, I think the other mistake that we make is when we talk about obtaining some future goal. And when I talk to children and or students in college campuses, you know, oftentimes their calling is focused on the future. You know, when I grow up, I want to be a doctor or a lawyer or a business person. Well, it's both and from my perspective. the both end is, today God has placed somebody in our path, and we are to serve them well. We're also required, you know, we will never fully utilize all the talents that God has entrusted to us, and so every day is an opportunity to improve. And by improving today, we're going to position ourselves to even be able to serve more effectively 5 years from now. You know, I think that the third mistake that I talk about is, you know, we typically ask ourselves, what do I want to do with my life?
Right.
And it's a whole different question than when we say, what has God called me to do with my life?
Mm-hmm.
I was talking to a gentleman who had just been laid off, and he said he didn't choose being laid off, and it's one of the worst things that's ever happened to him. But he has noticed that because of his new situation now, because of his suffering, God has indeed placed new people in his path to serve. And for now, that is his calling.
Back for a moment to this CEO you talked to who was concerned he no longer had the platform he once did. But he still had a platform, didn't he?
Yes. You know, every day we're alive, we have a platform to serve. Because, you know, I had a father-in-law who just passed away from dementia, but during the last few months of his life, you know, he was serving his family members by demonstrating to them how his strong faith is making this passage of time okay.
Hmm.
And because of the way he demonstrated his faith during his last few months of his life, all of his nephews and nieces and grandchildren's faith are stronger as a result. So he lived out his calling even during those last days when he knew he was about to die.
Wow.
And so we all have our own particular platforms, no matter what our station in life is.
One of the strategies you mentioned immediately is that we need to make God the center of our lives. Now, we hear a lot about that in religious writings and in church. What does that mean in a practical sense?
Yeah. You know, I like the phrase, a branch doesn't have to grow very hard to grow grapes. It merely needs to stay connected to the vine.
Yes.
And so in order, the first step that I tell everybody, if you are truly intent on discovering and living out your calling, the first thing that we need to do is take a step back and allow the Holy Spirit to work within us. Allow us, you know, to have that strong and strengthen our relationship with God. And so it may involve enhancing rituals in your life, that maybe more Bible study, more prayer time, going to church on a regular basis, but what can we do to strengthen that relationship with God? And then after that point is when I think you become open to more opportunities to what your calling is.
Mm-hmm.
My sense is that, and the secular literature confirms what is said in the Bible, that by reducing our own ego, we actually allow ourselves then to become open to more and additional opportunities to serve.
You do use the word ritual. There's been a tendency in recent years in faith practices to kind of reject rituals, but you're suggesting that these things are very important in our lives.
Rituals, in other words, are habits. And so what habits do we instill in our lives? And it's a sense that, you know, the Ten Commandments were not necessarily given for us to keep, but they were given to us to keep us. And so by, for example, adopting healthy habits within our own lives, we have a tendency then not to adopt certain unhealthy habits.
Mm-hmm.
And our habits actually become our lives. I was talking to a gentleman a few months back, and he shared with me that he hates to go see his grown children because when he goes and visits his grown children, all he sees in them are his bad habits. And so, you know, it's an indication and a truth that, you know, not only do our habits become our lives, they actually become our children's lives and our spouse's lives as well.
When you say that honestly telling your story to find your life, you're saying that sometimes we leave stuff out?
Yes, or at least we don't honestly confront the brutal facts.
Okay.
For example, if I would ask you to write down your goals, for example, how you want to serve your family, how
mm-hmm.
you want to fulfill your professional career, your congregational role. All of us have a pretty easy time at doing that. But when we're completely honest with ourselves, there's probably a very real gap between our good intentions and what we do. And so, for example, I have a very busy professional life. And, you know, I say I want to have this great relationship with my 16-year-old daughter. But yet somehow I spend every night, you know, late at the office or traveling in a hotel room. You know, what I say is my goal and what I'm actually doing in my life are two different things. And so then what happens, the next step would be, what rituals can I implement in my own life to ensure that I'm actually also fulfilling that goal of having that close relationship with my daughter.
Mm-hmm. I like that. Now, when you say that we need to also lead a life of simplicity, my life seems to be getting a lot more complicated, Kurt.
Yes, it is, especially this time of year, right?
Yes.
And wealth is neither good nor bad, but from my perspective, what matters is how we utilize it in service to others. You know, the Bible passage that Jesus talks about in Matthew where he says, where your treasure is, your heart will mm-hmm. be also. I think that's huge. And so the idea of living a life of simplicity is, you know, the definition of rich would be somebody who spends less than they make. And so as long as we spend less money than we're actually earning, mm-hmm. it allows us to have the opportunity to open our lives up to service to others. So it's the idea that we're not necessarily meant to live this life of deprivation, but we are actually called to live a life that's more fulfilling than the world has to offer. And so, you know, implementing principles of simplicity in our own lives allows us to become open to opportunities to serve. It allows us the privilege of taking other callings because we're not necessarily dependent on a certain lifestyle. And it allows us to maybe even more effectively and more honestly figure out what God has indeed called us to do here on this earth.
There's always, I think, been a tension in Christians' lives and thinking between the current life we're living, the existence we have, and yet also emphasizing a lot the future life, paradise, the eternal life with God, this sort of thing, seem to not want to deal with the present life, so they talk a lot about last day events and the future with God in heaven and this sort of thing. How does that balance come out?
You know, in my faith tradition, and I talk about it in the calling, is that, you know, we're called here on this earth to do two things. One is to worship God, and two, to be of service to others, so to be his hand and feet here on this earth.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, you know, I think as Christians, we all look forward to a future time where we're in heaven without sin. But for now, our calling is here on this earth. And so for me, it's important to combine both aspects, you know, both the doing and the being. The being side being the, you know, one in terms of my faith with Jesus and God. The doing side being that I am here to actually be of service to his people and his kingdom during my short time on this earth. And so it is a combination of both. And it's also an understanding that it's a sinful world out there. We're not always going to be successful. We're not always going to do the best of our abilities. But being a forgiven Christian is understanding that tomorrow I can embrace my new calling again, knowing that I am forgiving and knowing that I don't have to feel guilt about my past.
In a section you call the, well, there's various strategies here, and under the eighth strategy, you talk about caring for ourselves, and sometimes Christians are uncomfortable with that. I should be caring for others. How does that come out?
Yeah, and you know, I think in some ways I look at my life and our lives as both a sprint and a marathon. And so there are going to be days where we do have to sprint. So we're going to have to, as Bonhoeffer would talk about, provide costly grace. Or I think it's Abigail Ryan Evans who talks about becoming broken so that others may become whole.
Mm-hmm.
You know, visiting somebody in the hospital, caring for a sick child, working late at night to get the job done. But then, you know, in order for us to continue to be effective servants over the long term, whether it's to our family or to our profession, we also have to take a step back and care for ourselves so that we can remain healthy, so that we're able to be of value to our family and to our colleagues and to those we serve, you know, not only today, but in the future. And so, you know, I think as long as we care for ourselves for the right reasons, mm-hmm. knowing that, you know, our body is a temple of God and we use it in service to others as opposed to more of an ego-inflated, I have to look like this, so I'm going to go to the gym 5 days a week. It's that proper balance between doing and being.
In the section I was reading just recently in your book about serving, you know, you have serving our family, and we right away say, well, yeah, sure, that's what we should be doing. But you also bring this serving our profession, and it reminded me of a lot of things St. Paul said in his letters to the various churches, how they should be honorable in their work and serve their masters, this sort of thing.
you know, I think sometimes too in our world as Christians, we tend to separate. So we go to church and feel very good about the message that we heard, but we don't necessarily know how to apply it on Monday. And from my perspective, for us to effectively live out our calling, what needs to occur is that we blend our faith with whatever our roles are, whether it's our family role or our professional role or our community role. And so, for example, in our professional role, how well can I serve my customer or my client? You know, is there an employee that is in need of my help, is in need of listening, is someone going through a particularly tough time? There are so many opportunities to serve in our professional lives, in our eight-hour workday, that too is part of our calling. And the more we can integrate that within our faith, what I think we'll find is, you know, miraculously almost, that we get connected to various different dots in terms of other people that will allow us to maybe even combine our talents so that we can more effectively make an impact, whether it's on our profession or on somebody within our job or maybe on a customer or our community.
As you were describing this, I got to thinking that Christianity does seem to have a problem vis-a-vis some other world faiths, and that is we tend to compartmentalize a little too much. Here's our faith life, here's our church life, but then here's our family or professional life. And you're suggesting this is all linked.
I truly believe it is. And in fact, for us to not only discover our lives, our calling, but also to have that courage to live out our calling, I think we need to focus and in fact implement rituals within our own lives that allow us to overlap those circles. So maybe it's the circle of our faith life and our professional life, or maybe it's the circle of our family life and our professional life, or, you know, what can I do to, for example, bring God more into my family? Is that maybe a family devotion, or maybe is going to church as a group?
Mm-hmm.
All of those different things allow us to live that integrated life that is I think demonstrated so well in Proverbs when they talk about the lady who served her family, the lady who served her profession, the lady who served her community.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great example to us all how to live that integrated life of service and worship and faith.
Now, when you say embrace our suffering to discover our calling, could you unpack that a little more?
Yeah. You know, we don't ask for recessions. We don't ask for being laid off. We don't ask for illnesses or maybe even a terminal illness. But, you know, as Martin Luther talks about, those sufferings are opportunities to discover new callings in our lives.
Mm.
And even to, you know, embrace and to discover the salvation in our lives. And when things are going good in our lives, you know, we have a tendency to fall away from God. Our faith isn't as important as maybe it should be. But I'm a big believer that, you know, in addition to sin in the world causing some very ugly things to happen, that God also uses suffering to bring us back to Him, to make us remember that, you know, having a lot of money in the bank isn't what's important. What's important is how faithful we are to Him and how well we serve those who've been placed in our path. And so, you know, callings don't last a lifetime. And when I talk about in the calling is that there'll be things, chapters in our lives close, children grow up and go to college, we get laid off, we get sick, we get old, we retire. But these are then opportunities to discover what God has in plan next for us as we live out our life here on this earth.
As I look through your book, you have spaces, lines, numbered, where people can fill in things relevant to their own life. How would you ideally like someone who buys your book, receives your book, how would it best be used?
What I have found is that it's been most effective in maybe just several different formats. One is a lot of Bible studies are using this, women's and men's study groups,
mm-hmm.
and going through this on maybe a 6 or 7 week period and collectively talking about their journey, because it's broken up in nice steps of that journey that allow people a time to share. I've also had, it's interesting, a mother of a very successful CEO who shared with me that she and her son were going through this as he was just graduating from college and attempting to discover his own journey.
Hmm.
And they found this to be a very positive and helpful resource. And then, you know, I've had other people email or call me and say, you know, I just love, in the privacy of my own time, taking the calling and going through this workbook on my own and understanding maybe a little bit better what God has called me to do and bringing with me that peace that transcends all understanding as a result of knowing that I'm doing what God has called me to do.
The book is The Calling, Live a Life of Significance by Kurt Senske. That's S-E-N-S-K-E. Where can our listeners obtain this book?
You know, it's in a lot of Christian bookstores.
Okay.
And it's also available on Amazon.com as well as cph.org. If they'd like to know more about me, they can go to kurtsenske.com.
Okay, it's a Concordia Publishing House publication. Kurt, thanks so much for being with us today.
You're welcome, Dwight. God bless.
I'm Dwight Lainhoff. Thanks for listening to LifeQuest today. If you have questions or comments, you may send them to lifequest@lifetalk.net or write to LifeQuest at P.O. Box 33082, Knoxville, Tennessee 37930.